whether these were done by the militants or actually they were committed by the army itself, we'd never know.
A mass grave discovered in Myanmar. It's Tuesday, September 26th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, a snap election called for in Japan. A well-known Chinese artist visits VOA to discuss refugees. A partition museum opens. Fewer Hollywood visitors opening banned books. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Security forces in Myanmar said they uncovered a mass grave containing the bodies of at least 45 Hindus in Rakhine State and blamed Muslim insurgents for the atrocity. But the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army has denied killing Hindus, insisting it does not target civilians. Social Welfare Relief and Resettlement Minister Dr. Winmiat Ai told VOA Burmese he witnessed another 17 bodies recovered Monday after 25 bodies were found in two mass graves a day earlier. Ai said most of the bodies were of women and children, many with their hands tied, some which had been beheaded. Ai and a police chief told VOA Burmese they believe the bodies belong to more than 100 Hindus who have been missing for a month. The discovery comes a month after insurgents attacked security forces, prompting a crackdown that has killed hundreds and forced hundreds of thousands of Muslim Rohingya to flee Myanmar, also known as Burma, on to Bangladesh. Southeast Asia analyst Ali Riaz, a professor of politics and government at Illinois State University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty such claims cannot be independently verified.
And that is why what we have been, at least personally I am, in favor of having a fact-finding mission. And it is the Myanmar government which has been stopping this Human Rights Commission's, Human Rights Council's effort to send a fact-finding mission. At this point, this kind of allegation, of course, raises concern, but it also makes us suspicious because they haven't talked about all these things, whether these were done by the militants or actually these were committed by the army itself. We'd never know. So I take this with a grain of salt at this point, and you know, mostly I would say if they have these specific allegations, why don't they let international community investigate, because we have seen that almost, you know, 420,000 people have left and take refuge. There must be some other atrocity, definitely. Let's see if the fact-finding mission can be there and investigate all sorts of violence.
The head of the UN Refugee Agency on Sunday said Bangladesh needs massive international assistance.
Imagine that 420,000 people suddenly showed up, and most of them, as reported in the press, is mostly women and children. And some of them are sick, old, and of course Bangladesh was not prepared for it. And given the circumstances, it is impossible for Bangladesh, for that matter, any country, to house and take care of these people. And there is a health issue, food, shelter.
Some of the Rohingya who are fleeing in recent days said the Myanmar army is shooting at them as they hide in forests trying to cross the Naif River.
There have been many reports as such. As a matter of fact, what we also seem to know, that they have, putting mines on the border. A few dozens of people have specifically reported those either witnessed or survived this kind of situation, meaning that they have been shot at. A large number of women have reported that they were raped. And the children that crossed the border reported that they have lost their parents. All these things seem to be pointing to a clear ethnic cleansing.
In a televised address last week, Myanmar State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi said clashes in Rakhine ended earlier this month. But Ali Riaz said people in Bangladesh he has spoken with indicate the refugee exodus continues, suggesting rights groups are right, that the crackdown continues, and Aung San Suu Kyi is wrong. Violence in Myanmar's Rakhine State, which has caused more than 400,000 Rohingya Muslims to flee to Bangladesh and resulted in a widespread claims of atrocities and ethnic cleansing, was discussed frequently at the UN General Assembly last week. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Japanese Prime Minister calls snap election. Why Myanmar's government won't negotiate with Rohingya insurgents. mass protests failing to shake Philippine president's Teflon reputation. North Korea claims U.S. has declared war. Bangladesh coastal town, a place of Rohingya hope and tragedy. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, you can find them at the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has announced his intention to call a snap election next month, improving his chances of becoming the country's longest-serving prime minister that could extend his rule to the year 2021 if he can win re-election as the ruling Liberal Democratic Party's leadership post next year. The announcement Monday comes amid tensions over North Korea's missile and nuclear program and a political opposition that appears to pose little threat. Matthew Lindley, a Nagoya University professor, tells VOA there are a number of reasons why Mr. Abe chose to stand for election now, despite lingering tensions with North Korea.
Abe, I think, enjoys quite an advantage in terms of security and foreign policy issues compared to other politicians in Japan. He seems to have an idea of what he wants to do, which is clearly to cooperate further with the United States and to put increased pressure on North Korea. Another reason, though, is the weakness of the opposition parties at the moment. The Democratic Party of Japan just elected a new leader. He's a past leader. He's not particularly charismatic. I don't think the Japanese public is very excited by him. They've also had a few defectors. And then the third point might also be a concern over economic conditions in Japan in the near future. There have been some economists who've been saying that basically it's the end of Japan's business cycle. Which began in about 2012, and the economy has been growing, not super fast, but it's still been growing. And in the build-up to the Tokyo Olympics, there's been a lot of investment in infrastructure, construction, things like that, but that's going to be slowing down as well, too. And then another argument that a lot of political commentators in Japan are making is that perhaps Abe's biggest weak point right now is he's still tied to some scandals related to private schools. He's been accused, not proven, but accused of giving favoritism.
Having an election always carries some risk for the party in power and opportunity for challengers. Matthew Lindley says while Abe has some strong support, there exist significant unknowns that could provide a surprise.
I think possible. There was a poll that came out of Kyoto which said that I think there's only maybe about 30% or so support the LDP. But that's still a lot more than number two, which is the Democratic Party of Japan, which is only at 8%, but 42% are undecided. They might decide to support Abe, they might go with another party. I think a big difference with the Japanese election compared to the American election, the German election, and the British elections recently is there is no real serious opposition party that really poses a threat to the ruling party. The LDP may lose some seats, but I think overall, this has been Japan's problem the last few years. There's no real serious alternative opposition party.
However, Tokyo's popular governor, Yuriko Koike, announced Monday that she would lead a new conservative, reform-minded Party of Hope to provide a clear alternative to the LDP. The former LDP defense minister stunned the ruling party with a July victory in the local election. Meanwhile, Mr. Abe has directed his cabinet to come up with a nearly $18 billion spending package on child care and education. Happening now in Asia, North Korea's Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho says the United States has declared war on his country, and Pyongyang would take counteractions if threatened. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said, quote, "We've not declared war on North Korea," adding that the suggestion is absurd. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us today on VOA Asia. And we're happy today to have Chinese artist Ai Weiwei visit VOA and tell us about his new documentary, Ai Weiwei Drifting. which follows the artist for a year as he travels through the heart of the European refugee crisis. We share a part of his conversation with VOA's Penelope Palou, in which he talks about the attitude of countries as they deal with accepting refugees and how the experience may affect future generations.
You see the anti-refugee propaganda, even in the news, in the also social media, is so extreme. So politicians and the writers trying to divide the society to create this kind of hatred to one type of people, which is extremely dangerous and can bring us to a very dark age.
Do you feel that the same thing is happening here in the United States with the Trump administration? Or are there many more people who support the Trump administration, in your opinion?
Obviously, it also happens in anywhere in this world. Happens in China, happens in the United States. And so many people immediately trying to blame the foreigners, trying to divide the people and trying to separate the people and to create this kind of so-called beautiful war about, the Mexico and the United States. Those acts, it's not childish. It's a way of the political trying to gain some kind of popularity, but to sacrifice our very fundamental understanding about human created equal, and we have to defend humanity. If anybody's rights being violated, we have to act. Otherwise, we all have been violated. So it's not easy. We can see in a democratic society, or we call it this land of freedom, or those kind of very essential ideas of human rights or freedom need to be defended by each generation. It's never a given condition. So if we don't do so, then we can easily see the situation become really bad.
You said in the documentary at some point there is the reference that by fencing people, by locking people into a specific situation, this is what breeds resentment and radicalization. You were there, not only in Lesbos, but everywhere where you filmed, you were there. What is your visceral reaction to what you experienced as a human being?
I think if you see so many children are growing up in this kind of condition, in this 65 million of people. Now it's getting much bigger. If you talk about Myanmar, only recently have 420,000 people as refugees. If you see the images, it's all women and a child. And those people, those child, when they grow up, they only see how their parents being badly treated, unfairly treated. The world watching but not doing anything. They see that, people being killed, home being burned, the drones throw the bombs and kills, just blindly kill all the people. And what kind of image would remain in their mind? And, of course, this is very hard to answer.
Watch our website in the coming days and also VOA Asia Facebook for more on Ai Weiwei's interview with Penelope Palou, Chinese artist Ai Weiwei, visiting with Penelope today at VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia, nearly 50,000 people have evacuated the area around a volcano on Bali, as Indonesian disaster officials said an eruption could be imminent. The number of people fleeing their homes has more than quadrupled since Friday as the magnitude of tremors increase. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA. VOA Asia continues. The division of the Indian subcontinent by British rulers into two separate countries 70 years ago led to the largest mass migration in modern history. More than 12 million people displaced, over a half million killed. Anjana Pasricha tells us about the first museum to record the traumatic legacy of the birth of India and Pakistan. Located in Amritsar City in Punjab, the northern state torn by the worst sectarian violence during partition.
A sewing machine, a cooking pot, and a box usually find no place in history. But at the Partition Museum in Amritsar, this memorabilia captures the hope and despair of millions who, clutching a handful of possessions, fled the slaughtering and rioting that engulfed India and Pakistan after they were carved into separate countries in 1947. This violent chapter of history had been almost forgotten, says the museum's co-founder, Malika Ahluwalia.
Using those objects and the stories that each of them tell, we're hoping that visitors here will understand what partition meant for each of the millions of people who lived through it.
These photos, objects, and clippings shine a light on ruined homes, lives shattered and rebuilt, loved ones lost and found amid the carnage. A woman carried her wedding sari, her most precious possession. An 8-year-old girl pulled this box out of a ruined house, hoping to put new dolls to replace the ones left behind. This is a tribute to thousands of women who either jumped into wells or were pushed into them by their families to escape rape and abduction. But amid the carnage, there are examples of humanity.
That pulkari belonged to some woman who jumped into the well along with all her family members when they were attacked. But she was rescued by someone from another community.
Jagat Singh escaped the massacre in his village by crossing the Ravi River when he was 19. His most cherished possession is the documents for a student loan that enabled him to graduate and rebuild his life.
I had no money. I was living in a refugee camp. These receipts will help people understand the circumstances in which we completed our education.
The heavy price for independence paid by countless ordinary people leaves a deep impression on visitors like Pranithi.
It just makes me feel so free and so privileged and so aware of how unaware I was.
The scars of partition still fester. The South Asian countries are bitter rivals 70 years later. But this last exhibit keeps the hope of reconciliation alive. A barbed wire tree strung with green leaves on which visitors leave messages. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Amritsar.
This news alert from VOA Asia, mass graves of at least 45 slain Hindus have been found in Myanmar's troubled Rakhine state, according to government officials. Social Welfare, Relief and Resettlement Minister Dr. Win Myat Aye told VOA Burmese most of the bodies were of women and children. Some had been beheaded. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for top stories. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, according to the U.S. Travel Association, there are fewer people visiting the United States, even though international tourism as a whole is on the rise. VOA's Kevin Enix reports some tourism agencies blame the Trump administration policies on immigrants as the reason people are not making the USA a travel destination.
Rodeo Drive in Hollywood, California has always been a draw for rich international tourists looking to buy luxury goods in a place known for its luxury. But lately, there are fewer visitors, specifically fewer Arab and Muslim visitors.
We've got a lot of people from the United States visiting us this summer, and we especially have a lot of people coming from the Western U.S. this summer. We're still seeing quite a bit of international traffic, but we've seen our Middle Eastern business change somewhat.
By change, she means fewer visitors to Cartier and fewer international tourists at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel and at Prada.
So we're seeing smaller groups because a lot of the people who come from Saudi Arabia have big families and a lot of help that come with them, and the travel ban sometimes affects their help, and so the groups have shrunk down a little bit.
The strong U.S. dollar is also sending tourists to Europe, where their money goes farther.
The euro is weaker. It's easier to go to France. It's much cheaper to go to France and buy products and services. And many of these designer houses are located, you know, that's where their headquarters are. So, so there's a little bit of that that you have to take into account.
But it is not just visitors from the Middle East. Chinese tourism, also a mainstay of Southern California, is down from cities like Beijing and Shanghai.
I think there's a lot going on right now. You know, you have our political environment. You have a strong dollar. You have what's going on with Qatar and the backlash with the Emirates and Saudi Arabia. And I think all of those things combined makes for a different type of business.
But an increase in domestic tourism is helping a bit.
We have a lot of traffic. Our hotels are full. I think the one thing that we're seeing a little bit is that the business mix is changing somewhat. So where we used to be larger percentage international, smaller percentage domestic, we've seen that flip around a little bit.
In an effort to draw more tourists, the region has unveiled a new marketing campaign and is keeping more stores open later at night. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Are you able to read all the books on any subject you'd like, or has someone made a decision about what books are available to you to read? Well, in some places, you may not even be aware that some books are not found in stores, online, or in libraries. But here in the United States, this is Banned Books Week, an annual event that points out censorship and emphasizes the freedom to read. In Washington, the public library system has hidden around the city hundreds of copies of six books that may be banned or challenged in some libraries and schools here in the United States. People who find these books can take them home for free. VOA's Deborah Block brings us to a bookstore where customers are searching for the books they want to read.
Here at the Duende District Bookstore in Washington, customer Katie Schwartz is on a mission to complete her collection of the six free banned books. They are wrapped in black paper and hidden among other books for sale.
This is the one. This is the last one. Yay. I need. Thank you.
I had four of the books when I came in, which means I only needed two more. And the very, very first one that I opened was one that I haven't seen anywhere else.
Since notebooks are banned in Washington, Schwartz finds it hard to believe it is happening in the United States at all.
It's an American right to be able to express yourself in however you see fit, and it's also an American right to avoid things by choice that you don't agree with. And books are something that are very easily avoided if you don't agree with them.
Customer Lyric Prince comes across Fahrenheit 451, a science fiction novel where books are outlawed in American society, and any found are burned by firemen. Some people object to the profanity or burning of a Bible in the story. Prince is not surprised that some books, like this novel published more than 60 years ago, are still banned today.
A lot of places in this country don't exactly take kindly to progressive ideas.
At this public library in Washington, Linnea Hegarty, head of the D.C. Public Library Foundation, says those ideas may include political issues or sexual orientation.
Families with two dads or two moms, for example. Also, sometimes books about war are often banned, particularly if they talk about some of the political issues that are causing war.
Among the groups sponsoring Banned Books Week is the American Library Association, which puts out an annual list of the 10 most challenged books, a formal attempt to remove material from a library or school curriculum. Julius Jefferson Jr. is with the group's Intellectual Freedom Committee.
Some of the themes could be dealing with LGBT issues, certainly issues dealing with race, certainly issues dealing with religion. The majority of the books that are being banned you see coming from parents that want to ban books. They feel that these books are not appropriate for their children.
He says the American Library Association is aware of about 250 challenges last year. And the good news is that very few books ever actually get banned. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We like to say hello to all of our friends in Myanmar who've been listening via Facebook on VOA Burmese. Thanks for stopping by today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, David Byrd, and Ira Melman on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.